When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. We've got an exciting show. We're going to do some updates of Bill going to the Bondurant School and a big track day with the guys from Speedcore and some crazy supercars. And he'll tell you what his favorite supercar was to drive out there. And you know, before we get started, I'm going to tell you about Geico. We got a new Geico ad. Here you go. Do you own or rent your home? Well, sure. It doesn't make a difference. I bet it can be hard work renting or owning. Who knows what? So you know what's easy, though, is bundling your policies, your insurance policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Well, with Geico.com, you can get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Go to Geico.com today. That's Geico.com to get your bundled insurance quote. Hey, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and Bill Goldberg calling in from his lovely compound in Texas with the animals and the cars. And the, by the way, when I say the animals, I don't mean like his wife and son. I mean like the actual animals, guys.
And we don't mean dogs and cats either.
Yeah, right? Yeah, not dogs and cats either. We'll have to re-interview the donkey that you have running around because the last time he chimed in. So he was.
No, the other one's pissed off. He wants to be known now. So
right,
Donkey Dinkus doesn't want to do it, but Corporal Crunch will do the interview.
Is that really their names?
Yes, it is. Wanda calls me Captain Crunch, I guess, because I'm always in the best mood, and so the little one is not. You know, is not the happiest donkey, so she named him Corporal Crunch.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So there was a lot going on. Hectic schedules of running around. Somehow you and I both ended up in Arizona and didn't run into each other. But did you happen to swing by Barrett Jackson at one point? Did you walk through?
Absolutely not. No, I would not get sucked into that, because if I did on Sunday when I was there, I would still be in Scottsdale.
Yeah. Sunday night, they do their opening night gala event, and it's basically kind of like what you see on TV. There's this stage where the cars are, they auction the cars. There's the huge like line of chairs where all the bidders are. And then there's the skybox areas where they clear out all those chairs and they put some tables and some bar stools and they, you know, whatever, they host a big party. They could put a big band up on stage. They play music all night. People jumping around, having a good time. And basically, if you have a bidder pass, you're invited to this opening gala event, which is nice. And then the skybox areas are the sponsored ones. And then there's the Craig Jackson skybox that very fortunate to get invited to hang out there year after year. And for the gala event, I was up there again. So I got a nice little view of this party. I've never gone to the gala event before, and it was nice to be invited to go. And so I went to that. And because I've got to be here, we've got to be in the studio, we've got to do podcasts, I flew out there on a Sunday morning, checked into a hotel, got dressed, went to the gala event, went back to the hotel, packed up my shit, and flew back out on Monday morning. And early first thing Monday morning. And here we are back in the studio recording some shows. And when we're done with this today, I'm going to go back and jump on a plane again and head back out to Arizona Auction Week or Scottsdale Auction Week. And I'm going to swing by RM Auction. I'm going to swing by Gooding and Company, and I'll swing by Barrett Jackson. I know there's a bunch of others, Russo and Steel, Silver Auction, whoever else is out there. It's tough to get to all of them. And Bill, you know how these things are. Like, you want to go, you want to see all the cars and stuff and see some of the auction, but also it's just like, it's a big kind of a social, you know, event, and there's so many people out there that you know and people that you want to connect with that you don't normally get to see all the time. And, you know, some of the East Coast people are flying out for the event. And, you know, so there's always a lot kind of going on, lots of people to meet and see and catch up with. So
it's more of a social gathering, but you know, with this car culture and with these auctions, I mean, obviously, and noted quite often, I mean, we got a lot of friends everywhere, and it's a great time to rekindle those relationships. But truth be told, I want to look at cars.
I know. So,
you know, it's really hard to go, yeah, I mean, it's great to see you as you're staring at a Boss 429 or something, you know.
It is. So the plan has been for the last few years, it's worked out pretty good. My buddy Tyson Sullivan is a good friend of mine, actor. His dad's out there. His brother, his brother-in-law is retired baseball player, Brett Wallace. They're all out there. They love going to those events as well. So what we try to do is we try to plan to hit at least the three auctions, Gooding, RM, and Barrett Jackson. We try to see as many cars as we can in the mornings, and then we keep the afternoons or the evenings for as many as the meet and greets. So we kind of go in incognito in the mornings. We'll hit Gooding one morning, RM one morning. Thursday, we like to go to Barrett and basically just walk almost every aisle. Just look at whatever they have, 2,000 cars. Just kind of go up and down and see everything. And then in the afternoon, just start you know, making all of our appointments and times to meet people and things like that. So we do try to get quite a few cars. I went a couple of years ago. Tyson and I and my little brother went with us, and you know, he's got his head in his phone and he's looking down and he's texting people and whatever. And I said, hey, come with us. And we were in the line for the Dodge Hellcat Charger ride and drive. And he didn't, I don't know why he didn't get this. He didn't know this, but you know, he heard the cars in the background. He wasn't really looking up. We were in line, and I said, we're just going to go for a quick little ride. This guy's going to take us from here to there. It's almost like an Uber. And he wasn't doing the math on it. So Tyson and I got in the back seat. He got in the front seat. The Dodge guy was like, hey, welcome to the ride and drive event. We're going to go for a ride. And he just took off and starts drifting. My brother's like, what the hell? I just start screaming, and I was like, you kind of need to pay attention, buddy. If you had your head in your phone the whole time, you know what we were doing. You'd see people's reactions out there getting out of cars. He's never done anything like that before. He's not really a car guy. He's the gay chef, right? So he was kind of thrown off, but he enjoyed it a lot. And now every year he's like, are we going to Barrett Jackson again? I was like, yeah, come meet us out there on Saturday. So that was kind of a fun thing. So we're going to go. We're going to see the cars. The gala event was fun. I sat up there and got to chat with Peter Brock. And we had just done the premiere here in L.A. for the Shelby American documentary. And so we saw Pete there. And Pete, you guys know, listening to the show, Pete Brock worked for Shelby in the day. He designed the Daytona Coupe when they wanted to run Le Mans. The Cobra would only do like 160-something miles an hour on the Mulsanne Straight at Le Mans. So they needed a more aerodynamic coupe, and he designed the Shelby Daytona, or the Shelby Daytona Coupe, as some of us may know it, and immediately was like 20 miles an hour faster, like 190 something miles an hour. So he did that, and then he went on to design the 63 split window Corvette when he was a young designer at GM as well. And then, of course, all the BRE Datsun Racing fame and things like that. We've got a few of his cars over here. So I sat with him for a while and had a nice chat, had a couple of drinks, and it was a good time. He was all fancy in a tuxedo. And then before the auction actually opens, we walked around a little bit of the salon collection and saw some of the cars. And you're right. As we started getting further down the line, I was like, this is going to take me all night if I'm going to go and see all these cars. And then finally somebody from Barrett Jackson's like, yeah, we're closed. You have to come back tomorrow. And I was like, thank you. I was like, thank you for that, because I was just getting into the good stuff and I knew I was going to be like, oh, I got to go back and, you know, log on to the old bank account, see what's going on in there and see what. The other thing is the tax man just hit me up. My accountant's like, good news, you're only paying X percentage in taxes. Bad news is we need half of it today. I was like, oh, you cut it into my Barrett Jackson money.
I was gonna call it
BJ money, but that's something different. So it cut it into my Barrett Jackson money. So looking forward to that event. There's some cool cars coming up there. I want to get into what you did this weekend as well, but a little preview is later this week, the show that I do with Adam, we are going to tell you about a car that we did buy at auction. We bought a car at Mecum Auction over the phone on Saturday, and tune in to that later this week to find out what that is. It's pretty cool. So looking
around at all these auctions, you know, Everybody's got the one or the five cars that, you know, they're concentrating on, and that's they're advertising for each specific auction. Is there one that you've seen that if you had all the amount of money in the world that you would be there in 2 seconds to buy yet?
Well, there's always the super expensive $14-15 million Ferraris and stuff that are out there. I'm a big fan of the Jaguar XJ220. I've been talking about that for years, how it used to be a couple of hundred grand and now it's creeping up to 500. It's cool looking, futuristic, supercar. You know, the wheels are dated and the dash a little dated, but back in the day, it didn't do well because it was a turbo six cylinder. And now we have like four GTs and all these great cars that are, you know, six cylinders with turbos, and it's becoming acceptable. However, I don't know if I'm rushing out to buy anything, but in my world, a lot of eyeballs are on 293 Mustang Cobra R models. A buddy of mine was the guy that paid $120,000 for the R model last year at Barrett Jackson, and kind of broke the record. And he's a good dude, and he's like, look. He's like, maybe I overpaid, maybe I didn't overpay. It doesn't really matter. He goes, I wanted the car. I liked it. He's got a huge collection of Mustangs and Fox Bodies and Celines and all kinds of cool stuff. And by the way, like Grand Nationals and Camaros and Firehawks and all this Transams and all this stuff. So he's got a cool sort of the hairband collection of muscle cars, the 80s cars, 90s cars. And he was the first one to say, hey, I paid $120,000 for a Cobra R model. I don't know if it's worth that yet. I guess we'll see when another one or another one sells. And so there's two of them, I think, at Barrett Jackson. One has like 33 miles. The other has like 320 miles. And both of them could be in the six-figure estimates range. However, looking at I talked with him. He was over there and saw the cars. The one with 30-something miles on it, although super low miles, wasn't stored correctly. And this is important because, Bill, you had you bought two Demons, and you took the black Demon, and you parked it in the garage, and you put it in the giant air bubble. And, you know, it was basically like it was in, just like an operating room, super clean. And that is very smart. This whoever had the 33-mile Cobra R, it wasn't stored properly. It's got some rust. It's got some damage. It's got some. It doesn't present clean. It looks like it's an older car because of just the environment taking its toll on that car. Where the other one with 300 miles And I don't know there's much of a difference at this point of between 30 and 300. That is the car to get. That's the much nicer, well-stored, well-cared-for car. So it's kind of an interesting thing. You probably even did a little bit of research when you got the Demon to collect it. I don't know if you still have it or if you sold it or not. You were talking about maybe selling it at one point when you were moving or whatnot, but...
Well, yeah, we took it to the Global Auto Salon, remember?
Oh, yeah. So you got it home? So it's home now?
Oh, no, it's not home yet. Absolutely.
Oh, that's
not.
Right. No, you still own it. It's just not home yet, which is so that's so weird. I talked to somebody else, by the way. They said, yeah, our cars aren't home either. And I was like, how is that event? They're like, we're probably not going back. But, maybe they need to work out some bugs for sure. But anyway, that's an important part of how you store a car. If you plan on collecting a car or you plan on storing a car, even if your car's got 30,000 miles on it, you're like, you know what? I need to park it for a while. I'm going to let it go up in value. I'm going to collect it, or I just don't have time to drive it. Do a little prep. Do a little, you don't have to, necessarily, stick that thing in a bubble, but if you're able to, I'm sure that helps a lot. But you want to do some prep. Maybe you flat spot the tires or something for parking it. There's some things away around that, and tires can be replaced. But or you can put it up on up on jack stands and take the wheels and tires off. There's some things like that you can do. Fuel system and stable in the tank and whatnot. But I'm surprised by the amount of damage negligence did to that car. But anyway, those are two cars that I'm interested in seeing, mostly because I want them to do well. It helps the Fox body in the Cobra world, but it also legitimizes my buddy's purchase of $120,000 93 Cobra R model last year. I think he really wants those cars to do well because his wife will be happy when he can justify it. Plus, for him, in his head, it's a win-win. He's like, if they go cheap, he's going to buy them. And if they go for expensive, then he just increased the value of his car. So it's win-win.
Yeah.
anyway, so that's that. Tell me about, you said you were going to be heading out to Bondurant and thrashing some cars, going out there with the Speedcore guys and the Dodge guys. Tell us about that, and then we can do a little follow-up on the cars and Gearhead. Mario from Gearhead's just stopping by your place. He was on a plane.
Well, before I do that, I'm going to tell you the one that I'm looking at.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
These auctions. I haven't gone top to bottom by any stretch of imagination. I haven't seen dockets. I'm just... telling you about the interest because of this popped up yesterday. Meekin's got a 67 Copo Corvette ordered by GM designer Bill Mitchell set for auction. This was his wife's car to cruise yeah. around in. So a 67 Copo Corvette, a one of one.
Wow.
That's the kind of car that I'd be looking at if I was out there this weekend, for sure. I would definitely take my ass over to Meekum and check this thing out.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that because this past weekend was Meekum in Kissimmee. I don't know. I still
Kissimmee.
Can't. Kissimmee. Yeah. It was the Florida auction. That's where we purchased the car. Adam Kroll bought a car there. And I think a couple of months ago when they did one, they had a bunch of the old drag race cars, the Sox and Martin and things like that, and they didn't seem to do well. And maybe it was just the wrong time or something, or wasn't getting the right promotion. But a bunch of those cars actually did really well at auction. And you're talking about like some drag race stuff, some Copo stuff, some pretty interesting cars, in that muscle car world, some of the really significant cars. By the way, those cars selling, those gassers and those drag race cars, the Vega, the Pinto, the Ford Pinto that was up there, all of those cars going for big money is nothing but good things when it comes to the value of your lawman Mustang.
Oh, no question.
You know, because that Florida Mecum auction, if it, the takeaway for that is, I think your Lawman Mustang is going up in value as a result of that. Those cars are getting attention. They should get attention. They're all unique. They're, you know, maybe one of one. They have some drag racing history. All the road racing cars, the Le Mans cars, the Sebring cars, they've been getting a lot of attention and the big money. I think some of those drag racing cars deserve attention as well. And it was nice to see some of those cars, some of them go for above the estimate, which was good. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how those cars go as well. Is it Mecum?
Yeah, I mean, wait, it's, you know, from year to year, it's a it's a hit or miss. You know, it's amazing to see the lineage of those old drag cars and see how people present them, whether they restore them back to, you know, showroom or whether they keep the livery of the lineage of the car. But you know, each year it's they're definitely the ones that I look at because of the Lawman for sure. But let's get back to this weekend, man.
Yeah.
You know, I myself and Dave Savaggio from Speedcore and Matt Kuchar, a bunch of friends of mine and a bunch of friends of his, and Mr. Ralph Giles from Dodge and Fiat Chrysler headed out to Bondurant.
Did I see Trosel out there? I saw Mark Trosel?
No, Mark didn't make it out.
Oh, he didn't make it out there. I thought I saw
Mark didn't make it out. But, you know, Frankie over at Bondurant was just absolutely, they opened up their arms and their place for us, and we kind of had the run of it for the weekend, which was kind of amazing prior to the auction week out in Scottsdale that, you know, it wouldn't be completely slammed. But went out there to have a little supercar entertainment, man. And we were, you know, it's not every day that you get to drive a Senna, a Ford GT, 458, Performante, 570. You know, I could keep going on and on and on. But, you know, we went from car to car to car, comparing times, comparing, you know, the feelings of the car. And it was an unbelievable afternoon. It was one that can never be duplicated, I don't believe. But, you know, that and having the Speedcore carbon fiber Demon out there with six sets of tires from Nitto, that was kind of fun. But
so who brought the cars out?
An absolute blast.
Who brought some of these supercars out there? Just different people or one guy, or was just, how did that work? Who brought?
Oh, we had one of our buddies bring them. He will remain nameless.
Okay.
But
one guy kind of has a collection and you guys have worked with before, and he's like, let's, you know, if we're going to go out there, let's bring a few cars. And so you guys, Speedcore brought something. You sent the carbon fiber a car out there, and then he brought a bunch of supercars.
Yeah. It was we killed two birds with one stone. They obviously didn't have any supercars, nothing other than American Muscle out at Bondurant, which there's nothing bad about that, but it's interesting to be able to compare and contrast. And that's why he brought all of his vehicles. And, you know, they were so nice, we didn't want to destroy all their cars. We wanted to destroy a couple of his.
Now, was it just all road course stuff, or did you do some drag racing as well? What'd you guys end up? Obviously, you fried some tires. I saw videos and pictures on your social media of that. So there was
that. Yeah, we did everything but the drag racing aspect of it, you know, whether it was autocross or just.
Right. Okay.
Free fly, you know, free forming it, or road course. Road course, pretty much. Although it was, you know, it was really cool. Like I said, to be able to do the Senna on an autocross, and then get out and, you know, do the Ford GT and see, compare and contrast the two.
Now,
technology is an unbelievable thing. That's all I can say.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Did you walk away? What car did you like the most? What car surprised you the most?
The 458 surprised me the most. The car that I liked the most was the Senna, because you're not going to see very many of them. You're sure as hell not going to get the opportunity to drive it. It's such a unique looking car, and the technology is unbelievable in that it can make just about anybody drive that car well. that. It's a little chattery. You know, you do hear a lot of the the ground noise, a lot of the rocks coming up.
You know, the rocks, they hit like that carbon fiber bodywork, like in the wheel wells and stuff, without, like, you know, the modern cars, we have like sort of the plastic liner, then there's sort of a gap in there, and some of these cars, these supercars, they don't have it. It's just like carbon fiber in there with you know, and you could hear it all.
It's terrifying. It's not terrifying, but you're like, you know, am I doing damage in the car? I mean, it sounds so, you know, intrusive, but, you know, it's just, it is what it is.
So the Senna was fantastic. The technology is great in that thing. I'm sure there's several different modes, and there's the track mode, and the wing goes up and down, and the car goes up and down, and the technology is amazing. I drove the Ford GT as well at one point. I haven't driven the Senna. I've driven pretty much all the other McLarens. If the Senna is the 720S is one of the most amazing cars I've ever driven in my life, and I had the opportunity to drive a few of them and film quite a bit with them up at Angeles Crest. So almost like a track day for myself. It was a closed course, but up in the canyons, and I was able to really get on that car legally. And it's amazing. And if the Senna is even 10% more than a 720S, I couldn't imagine what that equates to, because the 720 is so amazing. So, and who knows? Maybe the Senna is 30% more. I can't imagine that. So.
No, it was amazing, and here's how good the Senna is. Mm-hmm. The Senna is so good that after getting out of it, after getting out of the Ford GT and then getting in the Senna, there was absolutely no comparison whatsoever.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the GT is pretty amazing as well. I drove that one. I wasn't able to do a track day with it, but. I drove it, and you know, but that car, even driving around town, it's a little bump. You do hear a lot of the road noise and the rocks and stuff. It does kind of make you feel a little bit like you're hurting the car, although you're not. It's interesting.
But that 458, man, I'm telling you,
I was going to ask about
performed so well. It wasn't surprising, but it was surprising how well it performed. I mean, it was just a notch under, or if not, you know, right with the Senna. But they're two completely different driving cars. And, you know, without a lot of seat time in each, you know, you surely can't take either one of them to the edge. Well, you can, you know, because of the technology, but, you know, it doesn't feel very comfortable. But, you know, I wish I had more time in both, but they were quite comparable.
Yeah, I can imagine that as amazing as those cars feel and how fast and capable they are, you switch hands, you put one of those cars in the hands of a Dario Franchini, and you'd be like, oh, we weren't even scratching the surface of what this car is capable of doing. Even when I went out and drove the new Shelby GT500 on the track, like, I thought I was going out there and pushing the limit. I was definitely sweating. My palms were sweating, and my sphincter was puckered. And then I took a ride with the Ford driver, and I was like, oh my God, I wasn't even doing half of what this car is able to do. I was scaring myself. And then when I rode with him, I was like, you're blowing my mind. So I could you imagine going out there with a Franchini or a Tony Kanaan or a Simon Pagenaud and going, hey man, all right, shotgun, you go do five fast laps in a Senna.
Oh yeah, I mean, that, what a trip that would be. I mean, I took laps with Danny Sullivan one time up in Aspen on a road or on an autocross or a road course, and that, you know, he didn't screech a tire, and he went around that track 10 times as fast as I did, and I was all over the place. It's just amazing. It's amazing to see their precision and their knowledge and their ability to be as calm as they are. It's truly mind blowing for me.
So the Ferrari, what was it that was surprising? You thought you were getting into a luxury supercar with the nice leather and the stereo, and then what? And then it just actually performed better than you thought?
Oh my God, yeah. Absolutely. It was right up there with the Shannon. Two completely different feels. But, I mean, it was as smooth. And, I mean, you didn't hear a thing rattle on that car, the Ferrari. And, I mean, it was so tight. It didn't push. It was an absolute dream. You know, and I couldn't drive it very well at all comparatively. The guy who impressed me more than anyone who actually, you know, blew me away was Giles.
I was just going to say that. Ralph's a pretty good driver.
Oh, my God. Not only is he good, he gets into it, and the amount of enjoyment on that man's face was awesome. I mean, it was a couple of days before his birthday, and it was a great experience to get a guy out there who's, you know, 9 times out of 10, he's behind a desk, and, you know, representing a brand, and he actually gets out a day with us and gets to relax, let his hair down, even though he doesn't have any, and have a good time.
Yeah. He posted a couple pictures he posted pictures of the Senna and him looking at it and getting into it and just saying like, this is kind of a surreal experience as well. So I knew you guys were out there and you're doing that and you're having a great time doing it. It seemed like everybody was having a great time. Ralph's such a great guy. We were at the M1 concourse with him a few years back, and he was showing us around and a bunch of the cars. And then, you know, we run into Monterey and stuff a bunch of times. But pretty interesting. So what do you know about the current state of the Bondurant School? Of course, you know, I love Pat Bondurant. I love Bob Bondurant. And, you know, unfortunate series of events. They weren't able to keep the school for themselves. Maybe some financial troubles, or just Bob getting older and older, and not being able to give it the attention that it needed. Through some chain of events, it needed to change hands. Who runs the school
and
now?
Well, you know, Frankie's the CEO over there. I don't know who the controlling entity is.
Okay.
But, you know, she pretty much runs the operation, you know, on site. And, you know, I called her with this idea of the guys coming out a number of months ago. And at the end of the day, it's about thinking outside the box. You know, we have a number of entities, businesses in this world that they stay straight straight-laced, you know. Mm-hmm. Nobody straddles that line, you know. Nobody takes a chance. Well, I think it's time that Bondurant took a chance and thought outside the box, and whether it's, you know, opening up their facility to stunt driving, or whether it's, you know, having these one-day, you know, private experiences, I think that the normal protocol hasn't worked as well as they thought. So I believe that they are going along with the normal protocol, but adding some other experiences and trying to think outside of the box at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with, you know, I spent a lot of time there in 2 days, and whether it be the instructors or the people running the place, you know, I'm not saying, you know, it's run a hell of a lot more smooth. You know, none of us want to say anything bad about Bondurant in the past or in the future, but
I've always had a good time there. I've always had a good experience.
Yeah, I've had a great time too, but the fact is that, you know, it was run into the ground. Whoever's fault it was, whatever happened, you know, it was a bad day for Bondurant, and hopefully, you know, this new company that's taken it over is going to lead it to more prosperous times. And I truly believe that, you know, they're going to do it. We've had a couple events there, and they're wonderful. I mean, you got to go there and experience what they've got going on. I think it should be a prerequisite for everyone who buys a Hellcat, any high horsepower car over 400 or 500 horsepower. I mean, it's a given that everybody should have instruction. So,
you know, we've always said this before. Like, obviously, a Dodge stepped up their partnership and their sponsorship of the Bondurant School. And by the way, I like that they kept the name. It's respectful to Bob. But regardless of what kind of car you're into or what you're a fan of, if if you're into any type of enthusiastic driving, you know, on the track or otherwise, you should go to a driving school. You should go and really kind of experience, even if your budget's tight and you do like the half day course, just go out there and talk with some of these instructors, get behind the wheel on a closed course environment and kind of understand a little bit about what some of these cars are capable of doing. And you're going to feel better. You're going to feel safer, going out there and checking it out. We've always said that. You know, I always feel like anybody who gets a license should go go do a 1 day course over there. But you know, not everybody can.
I think it should be a prerequisite. There's no question about it. It would be nice if the Department of Transportation made everybody do something similar.
Yeah, I know, right?
That should make me feel a lot better.
Yeah, you and me both. All right. Before we wrap it up, give us a little update on the time spent with Mario and Gear Head Fabrications. Last time we spoke, you were getting the cars ready, and they were flying in, and they were going to do look into your the fuel pump issue or the fuel level sender issue and some tuning and. And maybe you're going to pick them up from the airport in your truck and go, see, my truck is so slow.
Yeah, I didn't pick them up, but I did take them for a ride in it.
Yeah,
the red eye was the red eye was the one that had the fuel issue. So that was rectified by the dealer the day before. Gearhead came in to take care of the carbon Hellcat that. Hubert and I took out and had a little bit of too much fun with and destroyed the rear end in it.
Oh, so, that's right. Yeah,
we got a new Demon rear end from Dad's. Got the old one out, put the new one in, took a couple minutes, and then we rectified the leak. It was a
the supercharger was leaking coolant.
Yeah, the supercharger was leaking. The overflow canister was compromised, and as I thought, it did not take them long to identify the leak. I couldn't get to it because it is, you know, all the way back by the firewall. I couldn't even see it. I could feel it, but I don't want to start digging around in there. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, it was just a failed fitting. Very simple. Took it out and had a lot of fun, and now I think I think Mario is searching for a 6-speed. He had a lot of fun in that car. So you don't see many of them out there with 1,100 horsepower. So the car is absolutely awesome. So get ready to see me posting a lot of stuff.
Yeah, now that it's back on the road and you got it home. Again, this is the car that was over at SEMA. We took a bunch of pictures and saw it up at SEMA in the Magnaflow booth. But awesome. It's very cool. I'm glad that worked out. It was a successful trip for him. Now, did he make it out to Bondurant as well to drive or keep an eye on some of the cars, or he was back at the shop?
No, fortunately, we had all the mechanics from Bondurant out there. And they know those Hellcats like the back of their hand, that and the red eyes. And,
yeah.
No, he didn't make it out, unfortunately.
He's got to go to work.
He saved his token for the next trip.
Yeah. It's got to go to work. So,
yes, sir.
For myself, working on the Lightning. Two little updates for you guys is first off, I sent the superchargers out to be rebuilt. As I told you guys, I put it up on social media as well. I took the Powerdyne supercharger and sent it out to be rebuilt, and I took the old Vortec supercharger, the V2 that was on my BMW M3 that seized up, I sent them both out to this to 928 Sport Motorsports to get inspected and rebuilt. They said we got the Pro Charger. The Powerdyne. It's like we cracked it open. Everything looks good. There's definitely room for improvement. They said, the belt's a little stretched. The bearings are definitely worn, not broken apart, but certainly causing some heat and some friction. And it's got 100,000 miles on it, but overall in fairly good shape. So they're going to rebuild that. They're doing the Super Powerdyne upgrade, is what they call it, and it's got a their patented impeller, and it's going to blow more air basically at the same amount of RPM. Upgraded ceramic bearings, rebuild the whole thing. It should come out great. And they have an upgraded belt. Yeah, there's going to be a limit to what you can do with the Powerdyne. Again, we're just doing it so I can bolt it back on to see if we can make a little bit more power with the same setup. Eventually, we're going to swap the engine out and do something bigger. So this rebuilt Powerdyne should last another 100,000 miles or more. It should pump more air at the same RPM and last probably theoretically lasts even longer because those belt-driven superchargers, they get heat in the case. They're not oiled. They run dry. So these guys also vent the case to let some of that heat out, and it really contributes to the longevity of the bearing. So that's the first thing we're doing. Now, the Vortec, when I told you seized up on the M3, the bearings broke apart. One of the little BBs of the bearing went right underneath the teeth of that gear, and spinning that fast, it just locked up and almost welded itself. I've got pictures of it. Basically, like, welded itself to the case. So, and the impeller, I think, nicked the inside of the casing. That can be repaired. And 928 does their own impeller, so that's fine. They could swap out the bearings to an upgrade, which is fine. But that main shaft with the gears on it, that's not something that they make, and it's not something that Vortec typically sells. I am meeting with them next week to see maybe I can get one. Now, here's the thing, is we could fix it. I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet. I said, let me talk with the Vortec guys. We can take the shaft that's there and we can repair the teeth and get it to work fine. But repairing the teeth will take some filing and some things like that. And it'll make it more of – it'll probably make it louder. That's our concern. If you want a loud supercharger, then no problem. But I'm concerned if the strength of the metal has been compromised – and how loud will it be? Because when you basically like kind of file it down, it almost makes it like a straight cut gear. Is sort of the best way I can explain it. I'm sure there's more details that I can get you guys, but so the Vortec is salvageable and will be fine. But I've got to make a decision if that's the way I want to go and will I use that or not. But for as far as just some A-B testing, we're going to do the Powerdyne. We're going to put it back on there. We're going to run it again and see if we make like an extra pound of boost or so given at the same RPM just to see if we're making more power. Well, if you have an old supercharger, is it worth rebuilding or is it worth rebuilding and upgrading? So did that. And then the other thing is – very common on these on the Ford trucks, the Broncos, the F-150s, all in that sort of that early 90s era, mid-90s, is the PSOM, the P-S-O-M. It's the gauge cluster behind the speedometer. There's a board, there's a little computer board in there, and it helps to control shift harshness with the transmission, when it shifts and how it shifts. And I ran into a few issues. Is I think there's a shift kit in my stock transmission, which is making it a little bit harsh, but also a bad PSOM can contribute to that. And then as I was at wide open throttle, when I hit about 4,000, maybe 4,100, 4,200 RPM, at wide open throttle, it doesn't shift. It kind of holds it there and runs out of breath. And if I let off the gas a little bit, then it'll kick into that shift. So there was something wrong with that. And I couldn't say for sure if it was the PSOM or the transmission, but process of elimination, I took the gauge cluster out. I sent it out to a company called Cluster Fix. They rebuilt the PSOM. They do some soldering, some new chips, and they basically make it bulletproof. While they were in there, they restore the gauge cluster for me as well. You know, any fading on the orange needles and polish the lens, and they do a whole thing and they make it kind of nice for me. So I just got it back. I haven't installed it yet, but we'll see if that makes a difference as well. We had some problems on the dyno over at Banks on getting the dyno to work well. Anyway, that's that. So anyway, that's enough. We're going to do – we got to – let the studio go. So we're going to wrap things up. And Bill, I know you've got to run as well. So we'll have some updates next week. Oh, next week's we're going to have some updates possibly from the auctions, but I believe we might be having our buddy Alistair Weaver come in and maybe give us a CES recap and some other things as well. So, and Bill, maybe you're off to film some NCIS. Los Angeles.
Maybe, yeah, maybe I'm getting on a plane here in a couple hours.
Yeah, maybe you're getting on a plane doing it. All right, we're going to let things go. We're going to let you go to the airport and do your thing, and I'm going to go catch a flight to Arizona. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the updates. I'm glad you had fun at Barrett-Jackson or at Bondurant. And until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
And your hair on your head.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.